We've entitled this series, The King and His People, because the two big questions that Mark is concerned about in this book is who is Jesus and what does it look like to follow him? And his basic answer to the question of who Jesus is that Jesus is God's king. So part of being a king is having authority. And at this point in the book of Mark, he's showing us Jesus' authority as God's king. So 2 weeks ago, the last time we were together, thanks to this snowstorm, we looked at Jesus' authority and how he uses his power as a king, not to punish wrongdoing and sin, but actually to forgive it, to release people from the debt that they owe him through their sin. And today what we're going to see is Jesus' authority over the Sabbath. And the Sabbath is a term that refers to a day of rest. So we're talking about rest. And rest is kind of a funny topic for a lot of us, especially in Philadelphia. For example, one of the easiest ways that you get rest is your sleep every day. God created us to have a sleep cycle. And if you're up on any, I know a lot of you read like health blogs and you're into like the latest diet or the newest workout method or whatever else. If you read anything on sleep, there's tons of studies coming out now on the importance to your health of getting a regular amount of sleep and the health consequences of not getting that. The National Institutes of Health suggests that the minimum sleep that you should get every night, so the low end, is 7 hours or more per night. And some of you just laughed at me a little bit because you know that you almost never get 7 hours of sleep on a normal night. And you are not alone. A 2014 study showed that in Philadelphia, people on average get less than the minimum amount of sleep each night. So not like we're below average, we're below the minimum. We're below the baseline of where you're supposed to be. And that was true of all of the major cities throughout the U.S., actually. Another example, there were two articles I read in Philadelphia Magazine. One of them was by a guy who basically suggested that real companies, legit companies, don't give their employees off for stupid holidays like President's Day, you know? And so kind of this idea of, like, you need a break and rest, like, that's kind of for lazy people. And real companies know you got to work hard and you can't take off for stupid days like President's Day. In fact, he even suggested that one of the main reasons that you should give your employees vacation is to see who kind of keeps one foot in the office. So who's still checking in their email? Who's still calling back? And he says, those guys, they're your future management. They're the people you really want to move up in your company. At the same time, a Philadelphia Magazine staff writer wrote another article about a two-week vacation she took and how glorious it was for her to shut off her work email for 2 weeks. And it was like, you know, she had never done it before, and she just realized this was so restful and so good for her. She knew she needed it, and sure enough, it helped. But she may have just cost herself a promotion in the company if the test for whether you should move up is whether you still check in when you're on your break. And I think we all feel this tension with rest. You have this intuitive sense of like, yeah, I should be getting that and I need it, but I kind of stink at it and I struggle to do it really well. And there always tends to be this dispute around the topic of rest. The passage we're going to look at today revolves around a dispute about rest. And Jesus is going to be in an argument with opponents. And his opponents look like people who are really concerned with rest. But ironically, what we're going to see is that they are the enemies of rest, and that Jesus presents himself as the true rest. Jesus is your true rest, such that if you have him, you can also rest truly. So look with me at Mark chapter 2. We're going to start reading in verse 23 up through the end of the chapter. It says, one Sabbath, he, Jesus, was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? And he said to them, have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry, he and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him? And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. So our story begins with the words one Sabbath, and immediately we have some explaining to do. The Sabbath is a word that first appears in the Bible in the book of Exodus, the second book of the Bible. And in the book of Exodus, God commands his people that they are to work for 6 days, and they are to set apart the seventh day as holy, that it is a Sabbath, meaning they are to rest from their work on that seventh day. So 6 days of work, one day of rest. And the reason God gives that they are to do that is because when God created the world in the Bible, he created it in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. And since God created humans to be a picture of him, to be a display of his beauty, it makes sense that our work would be patterned after his work. He worked six, rested one. He calls us to work six, rest one. And our story here takes place on that one day of the week, that rest day, that Sabbath day. And the disciples are enjoying some time with Jesus. They're not working. They're just walking through the fields, and they get hungry. So they pluck some heads of grain, and they eat them. I guess that was a thing that you did back then. I don't ever imagine myself plucking a head of grain and just eating it right off the thing, but apparently you can do it. So anyway, they pluck a head of grain, they eat it, and they run into this group called the Pharisees, and they have a problem with that. Now, the Pharisees were the religious or good people of the time. I've had conversations in here with some of you where you say, you know, I like some of this stuff about the community and everything, but I'm not really the religious type. That's just not kind of how I'm wired. I'm not into the whole religion thing. And whatever is in your head when you're thinking of the religious type, that's kind of what these guys were. They were the ones who were always in church. They were the ones who always followed the rules. They were the ones who kind of did everything right. The irony is they're also the ones that Jesus gets in his most fights with in his time on earth. And ultimately, they're instrumental in the plot to kill him. And when we think about that, it actually should come as no surprise to us. What we've seen about Jesus already in the Gospel of Mark is that he came announcing good news. And he announced good news of forgiveness that was granted to people apart from anything they did. So he announced good news, and he forgave people freely. What religion does is it announces not so much good news, but more good advice. Here's what you should do. So what every religion kind of has in common is there's very different methods for how you do it, but the one thing underneath religion is here's a method. Here's something that you need to do. And if you do this, you can gain acceptance from God, nirvana, whatever else, fill in the blank of what that higher enlightenment or fulfillment is. But it ultimately comes down to whether or not you execute the rules for meditation, the rules for generosity, the laws of good and bad, and you know, right and wrong behavior. And that means religion is about good advice that you follow. And therefore, if you do wrong, the only way you can be forgiven is if you make that up somehow. Forgiveness may not even be possible in some religions, but if it is, it's usually because you did something good to replace your bad deeds. You showed how sorry you were, you really made it up to God, you tried harder next time, and you put your best foot forward, and therefore, now you can be forgiven. Here comes Jesus, and instead of preaching good advice, he preaches good news, which is not something you do, it's something you believe about something he has done. He's at the center of it. And he comes preaching a forgiveness that instead of you earning it, he earns it for you and then gives it to you freely. Totally different than what religion is all about. So, of course, he comes into conflict with these Pharisees. And an important consequence of religion, if you think the good people get loved and get accepted, it becomes really important to define with scientific precision what a good person is. Because the only way I can sleep at night, the only way I can know that I'm loved and accepted is if I can look in the mirror and say, I'm a good person. So now I better know. I better know what counts and what doesn't. And so the Pharisees were kind of like that. They needed to know with precision what counted as right or wrong, what counted as God's law or not. Think about it. If you're a weightlifter, let's say, and you think the people who get loved and accepted are the strong people, well, now it's going to become pretty important that we put some more clarity to that. Well, what do you mean by strong? Are we talking like upper body, lower body? Are we talking like cardio or anaerobic? Are we talking, you know, high reps or low reps? Okay. So let's say it's the deadlift, okay? We know that's a good measure of strength. Okay, strong people are the ones who have a good deadlift. Well, now get more specific here. What's a good deadlift, you know? Like, is it 300 pounds? Is it 350? Is it 400? Are we talking one rep max? Okay, so you know, because you're in the gym, and let's say you pull a 400-pound deadlift, and you look at the guy next to you, and he's doing 450, and you wonder, am I strong enough? You know, am I good enough? How strong is strong enough? It has to be defined so I can know, am I there or not? Am I strong or not? And the Pharisees say, we have to define stuff so that we can look at ourselves and say, am I good or am I not? So God's given this command not to work on the Sabbath day. Okay, but what counts as work? We got to define that, okay, so I can know if I'm a good person. Just tell me what I have to do so I can know that I've done what I'm supposed to do. And many of us feel that way with Christianity. You know, you hear commands like love your neighbor as yourself, and you're like, Come on, like, just tell me what I need to do so that I can go to bed tonight and know that I did my duty. And that's what the Pharisees are looking for. It's a very religious way of thinking about things. And it brings them into conflict. The irony is, as a result of that, they can't rest. Look at what they're doing on the Sabbath day. They're going around judging people who are picking heads of grain to feed themselves. They're not at home enjoying rest time. They're out looking around for someone breaking the rules. On top of that, the people they're talking to can't rest. I don't know about you, but one of my favorite things to do when I'm resting is to eat something. It's not particularly restful for me to be walking around starving. And so Jesus and his disciples are doing what most of us do when we rest. They're hanging out. They're enjoying some time together, and they get hungry, so they eat some food. But as a result of this Sabbath law that was there to give rest, they're now not allowed to rest. They're supposed to starve instead of being able to actually rest on this day. And religion will always do this to you. It will always make you judgmental. Because your whole world is built on whether you're a good person, and so you have to measure that against other people. And if there's other people going around who aren't following the rules, but thinking they're good people, that's a real threat. It's like, again, let's say the deadlift in your mind, okay, it's a 400-pound deadlift, that's what makes someone strong. You're at the gym, you pull off like 410, and you're like, yeah, okay, I'm one of the strong guys. And someone next to you does 350 and starts jumping around, and everybody's high-fiving them. You're gonna be like, what the? Come on, 350? Like, that's not strong, you know? Like, give it a break. You're judging that person. Because the very fact that they could be happy doing less than you is a threat to your whole world. You think only the good people should get this love and acceptance, and you're not one of them. Stop acting like it. If you find yourself, when you notice flaws in other people, sometimes you're just making them up, okay? It's just your preferences. That's not actually a problem with this other person. That's your problem. Sometimes you see things in other people that really are a weakness. But if you find your response to that is this kind of angry, I better tell them, they can't keep doing that. How dare they? You're being religious. You're operating on a totally religious paradigm. You're thinking, I'm one of the good people that God accepts. How dare they not measure up to my standard of what a good person is? So that's what the Pharisees are doing. And a result of this is you'll never rest. You'll never rest. Because you always will go around with this baseline feeling of, I'm not doing enough. I know I need to be a good person, and no matter how much you try to tell yourself you are, some part of you knows, I could be doing more. I could be doing better. So the idea of not working, the idea of taking time to rest is ridiculous. There's more to be done. I have to prove myself. And this can come out in religious or irreligious ways. So some of you think, I don't really stress too much in a given week about how much I'm pleasing God. But I bet there's something in your life that you do stress about. I bet there's something in your life that you do feel the need to prove yourself with. And for many of us, it's our career. Many of you feel like, okay, I don't have to view myself as a good person before God, but I do have to think of myself as a good employee. I do have to think of myself as successful. I do have to think of myself as a good student, or I have to make sure that one day I'm going to be successful in this field that right now I am studying for, because how could I live with myself otherwise? There's this need to prove yourself because you're still operating on this religious paradigm that the good people or the good student or the good employee or the good CEO or the good doctor or the good whatever else gets love and acceptance. And that's what I need. And that's what I crave. So you can't rest. And inevitably, you burn out at some point. So you're finally like, all right, fine. I've been overworking for 2 weeks. Let me just take a few hours and binge watch Netflix. And then the whole time you're watching it, you're just feeling guilty because you're like, oh, man, ice cream scoop number 7, another episode. I really should be working right now. And the next day, you feel awful. And you didn't rest anyway because the whole time you were just stressing about how you really should be working. It's broken. It's a messed up cycle. And it's all because religion is the ultimate enemy of rest. The enemy of rest is this need to prove yourself. And that's why the Pharisees show up in our passage as the enemies of rest. That's what their whole life is about. The interesting thing is that Jesus doesn't reply by saying, like, guys, let's stop worrying about glorifying God and all this obedience stuff. Like, come on, just chill out a little bit. That's outdated and traditional. And he actually goes to the Bible. He says, I'm going to go deeper into the Bible and show you why what you're doing actually contradicts it. Jesus doesn't say, if you really want to rest, you got to get rid of this Bible stuff. You got to stop letting God be Lord over your life. Just be free. No, he says, we're going to go deeper into the Bible, and we're going to find true rest there, something better than what you guys are doing, and something that actually contradicts what seems to be your surface-level adherence to the Bible. What he's going to do is he's going to show us the priority of rest. So we've just looked at the enemy of rest. Now let's look at the priority of rest. He tells this story about David. He says that David was a king in the earlier part of the Bible. And David, at some point in his life as king, went into the temple and he ate bread that Jesus affirms was unlawful for him to eat. There was a law about who was allowed to eat that bread. And only the priests were allowed to eat the bread. David was a king, not a priest. So he was not supposed to eat that bread. And yet he says David made the God-glorifying choice when he and his men were hungry and they chose to eat the bread. David, as the king, had a unique position of authority where he could interpret the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. And he chose to eat the bread, even though it was unlawful. And yet that was still the God-glorifying decision. Now again, to a religious person, it's ridiculous. There could never be a situation where you could break the law. Only the good people get accepted. Come on. And what Jesus is doing is showing them, no, within your own scriptures, we have examples of a God-glorifying decision breaking the letter of the law. And he concludes from this in verse 27 that the Sabbath is a priority, but it's not the ultimate priority. He says, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So we learn two things there. The Sabbath was made for humans. Humans were not made for it. The Sabbath was made for you, and that means to neglect it is stupid. But you were not made for the Sabbath. Okay, so first of all, the Sabbath was made for you. In a sense, you need it. You need it because you're human. You're not infinite. You can't go, and never stop. Sleep is the most constant reminder of this. You get to the end of every day, and you're reminded, I need to rest right now. I need to stop working. I'm going to get nothing done. Nothing's getting checked off, unless you put sleep on your to-do list. Nothing is getting checked off your to-do list in those 2 to 8 hours that you sleep, okay? You're just resting. But a lack of sleep, your body will prove it to you. Your body will prove it to you that you need it. A lack of sleep has been linked to migraines, diabetes, anxiety, obesity, on and on and on. You need sleep. And one of the lies of contemporary life is that you don't. So back in a time period where there was no electricity, it might have been easier to embrace this. I don't know. I didn't live then. But I imagine if the sun went down and you couldn't work anymore, you had to kind of get used to the fact that, like, okay, I guess we're done for the day. Like, I can't put a lamp on my tractor and go outside and keep plowing these fields or whatnot. And I don't have a tractor in the first place. But today, not only can you just flip your lights on, you can flip your laptop on and you can connect to the internet and you can VPN into your workplace and they can get you on your smartphone. No matter where you are, you can be on duty. Now, sometimes that's nice, right? You can work from home, and you can stay in your pajamas and grab lunch out of your fridge. But the downside is you can always work. And so the lie that you end up believing is I can be everywhere at once. I can be everything to everyone. Oh, there's more to do? I can do it. I'll figure it out. One thing technology will never give you is more than 24 hours in a day. I don't think it could ever give you that, right? Time travel? Okay. No more than 24 hours in a day. I'm just going to assume that one's not happening, okay? And another thing it can't do is it can't make you more than human. You're always going to be a human, and therefore you're always going to need rest. The Sabbath was made for you. The problem is we suck at it, and so God forces it on you. He comes to you and tells you, no, you have to do it. Some of you have bosses, and if they've read any stuff on productivity, they know that they have to give you breaks. They should be giving you vacation, even if all they're concerned about is the bottom line of the company. And so sometimes your boss knows that you stink at it. And so he or she comes to you and says, you need to take a day. I'm forcing you. Next week, you're out. Today, take a day off. And at first, you're like, no, we have more to get done. But afterwards, how much of a blessing is that? When your boss just makes you take off. In fact, some companies have started to institute this now. There's this crazy policy called minimum vacation. In Philadelphia, there was an article on it. Some of the up-and-coming companies, they were doing unlimited vacation, but they found no one was taking it because there was like this thought of like, well, but it's kind of like optional practice, like you have to be there, right? Or unlimited vacation, but you're not allowed to use it. So now they institute minimum vacation. You have to take at least 2 weeks because they know if I don't make you take it, you won't, and you need it. And so what God is saying here is the Sabbath is kind of like a minimum vacation. It's like saying, you need rest, and I'm going to make you take it this one day a week, at least. So it's a gift. It's not a burden. And what the Pharisees are doing here, and what religion always does with it, is it takes it from gift to burden. It says, yeah, okay, you get to rest. It'd be like if your boss gave you a day off, and then he said, but I'm going to be there the whole time and making sure you're doing the right stuff the whole day. And the whole day, you're kind of looking over your shoulder like, is this rest, or does this count as work? He's like, no, that's work. Stop doing it. That's not restful, okay? And so that's what the Pharisees are doing. They're making it a burden. So the Sabbath was made for you. Don't neglect it. You tend to stink at it because you feel like you have to prove yourself. But God's come and given you this requirement, this minimum vacation, that you actually rest. Take advantage of it. On the other hand, you were not made for the Sabbath. So the Sabbath should be a priority in your life, but it shouldn't be the top priority. Jesus says there's some things that trump even the Sabbath, that there's something more ultimate than that. But sometimes we can look on that day of rest or the time off as almost heaven. Like, just once I get to the weekend, or once I finally get to take that vacation that I've been waiting for, then my life will be solved. Two ways I've seen this in my life. One is, I think when I finally have a day off, I can do all the stuff I really want to do, but that I haven't been able to do with the time that I've been working. And so I load up my calendar. It's like, let me go down to the market, let me go see this movie, let me go to this park, let me play this sport. And I have fun, usually not as much as I build it up in my head to be, because it's not quite heaven, okay? But then I go and do it, and I don't rest. I get to the next day, I get to work on Monday, and I'm exhausted because I spent my whole day doing things and loading up my calendar because I thought this day has to be perfect and amazing. And so all day it's get to the next thing, get to the next thing, get to the next thing. And ironically, when you make the Sabbath ultimate, you don't rest. Again, you fail to get what it was actually created to do. On the flip side, I realize, okay, that's kind of stupid, right? Like, not going to work long term. So now, when I rest, I'm going to shoot for total serenity. Nothing on the calendar, relaxing, transcendent, you know, perfect peace. The world's not like that. We don't live in that world. And so if you set it up that way, and that's your demand on your Sabbath day, you're going to be angry all day about everything that intrudes on it, okay? Oh, it's raining out. You know, I just wanted it to be peaceful, and it's raining. This is terrible. I had off for Martin Luther King Day a couple weeks ago. I know you're jealous. You know, my boss is a good guy. So he gave me off for Martin Luther King Day. And I got about halfway through the day, and I was doing the rest thing pretty well, but I realized, hey, we're still going to need to eat. Huh? Yeah, dinner. Okay. That means, and my wife had some other stuff going on that day, so one way I could really serve her would be to get some groceries, to cook the food, and then to clean the dishes. And those of you who do that regularly know that's more hours than you often think it is in your head. And so I felt it immediately. But wait a second. This was my day. This was supposed to be about me. This was my day, you know? If you need rest, if you view your Sabbath as your day and the day when you cannot serve and love other people, you're putting it way too high on your priority list. You're saying that you were made for the Sabbath, that rest is ultimate. Rest is not ultimate. People have the freedom to intrude on your rest sometimes, and you have opportunity to love them in the midst of that. So it should be a priority, but not a top priority. That's what Jesus is saying here. He's saying the way you guys are treating this is putting it in a place that looks like you're lifting it up, and you're actually lifting it up so high that you can't rest. You can't actually get the thing that it's after. So how can you get it? This is the true rest that Jesus points us to, and we'll see it in verse 28. He says, so the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. So he's making a conclusion. He's saying, David went into the temple, took this bread. What we learn from that is that the Sabbath is there for man, not man for the Sabbath. So you're not beholden to it in this kind of slavish way. But here's another implication. That means the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Now, Son of Man is a word used earlier in the Bible to look forward to predict a king who is going to come. So again, Who is Jesus? Jesus is the king. And he's saying, if the Sabbath was made for humans, then the king over all humans is also king of the Sabbath. But he doesn't say he's Lord over the Sabbath, as if he's saying, Sabbath is stupid, forget about it. He's saying, I'm Lord of the Sabbath. In a sense, he is the true Sabbath. He's saying the rest that you need, the real rest that you need, is found by coming to me. And if you have me, that's how you will experience the true rest. Because here's the deal. Work is tiring, right? It's just the nature of the beast. That's part of being human. But the really tiring work is going to work every day feeling like you have to prove yourself. If you go to work and your boss gives you, here's the five things I want you to be working on this week or over the next month, that's going to make you tired, right? There's demands being placed on your time. But if you feel like these are the five things I have to do to prove myself, that's going to exhaust you. That's going to wear you out. Because we know intuitively that in order to be loved, in order to be accepted, we have to have something to give. And it's actually true that in order to be accepted by God, you have to be able to present to him a record of good deeds, a record of righteousness. The problem is, we all already failed that. We all have already fallen far short of doing that. And that is the rest that Jesus came to give. That is the work that Jesus came to do. So that when he was on earth, he did fulfill a record of good deeds. And when he was on the cross, he says these three words. He's so freeing if you believe him. He said, it is finished. It is finished. He's saying, all the work you need to do to be loved and accepted by God is finished when he died on the cross. And that means there is nothing that you can add to it. So we always feel like we have to build our resume. I have to have something to present. I have to have something to show that I'm good. And what Jesus is basically saying is like, dude, your resume sucks. Just toss it. I have a perfect resume and I'm giving it to you by grace. To receive Jesus by faith means true rest because the work is finished. And no rest on earth is like that. I told you I had off for Martin Luther King Day. So I got off Monday. I came back Tuesday. I had just as much work to do. Except now I had to do it in 4 days instead of five. That's not what coming to Jesus is like. It's like someone did all your work for you. And now you just enjoy it. We talked about rest earlier as something you need to kind of recharge. There's actually a deeper reason for rest. When God created the earth, we said that was the pattern for rest. He worked 6 days, rested a seventh. God didn't need to rest. He didn't have to recharge anything. He's God. He doesn't get tired. He's not human. He is infinite. He can be everywhere at once. He is everywhere at once. He has all the power. He didn't rest to recharge. He rests to enjoy. He rests to enjoy finished work. His work of creation was done, and so he says it was very good, and he looked at it and just enjoyed it. When we rest, we are enjoying God's finished work. We're enjoying the finished work of creation, but perhaps more significantly, we're enjoying Jesus' finished work. You're sitting back and saying, Jesus did everything I need to be loved and accepted by God. And so today I'm not going to work to build my resume. Today I'm not going to work to prove myself. I'm going to set aside time just for him, to worship him. So what does that mean for your work? A couple kind of things that I think will help us to put this into practice. The first thing it means is that this law, that it must be one out of every seven, that it has to be on a certain day, is not binding on Christians today, because you have the fulfillment of that law if you have Jesus. So if you are in him, you don't have to feel like you're sinning if you sometimes have to work on a Sunday, for example, or that it has to be this day or this amount of time. But if the Sabbath was created for you and Jesus is your true rest, then it makes sense that you would build into your life a kind of rhythm of regular rest and regular interaction with Jesus. So I would still say it's very wise to say one day out of every seven, or some equivalent thereof. Maybe it means 4 hours one night, 4 hours in the morning, some other time. We work on Sundays at City Light, so we take a half day on Friday, and then Saturday's an off day for us. Some way to get that rhythm into your life. So that's the first thing, is shoot for a rhythm. And shoot for a rhythm not just weekly, kind of daily, weekly, and yearly are three categories to think about it in. So there should be a daily rhythm of work and rest. There should be time every day where you say, work's done now. I'm going to sleep. I'm going to relax. I'm going to clock out, so to speak. If only we still had jobs that did that, it'd be a lot easier. But you're done for the day. Shoot for a rhythm weekly. One day in seven is a good place to start. And shoot for a rhythm yearly. In the law, in the earlier parts of the Bible, there were actually even Sabbath years, years where they were not allowed to farm the land, and they were to store up years before in order to provide for themselves for that year. And so there should be time periods in your life where you're saying, hey, we're going to take a whole weekend and relax, or a vacation, you know, a week or two, where if you're able to do that, you can take time away from work. The American model is overwork for 6 months, 2 weeks of overindulgence. Okay, that's like one part of the rhythm, but you're killing yourself and worshiping a false god for 6 months, and then you're kind of switching to worshiping yourself for 2 weeks. Worship Jesus the whole time and just get a daily, weekly, and monthly rhythm that's going to enable you to do that. Okay, so shoot for a rhythm and talk about that. Talk about that with friends, with spouse, with your city group. You know, what would be a rhythm that would make sense for you? Some of you, for example, I know some of you are residents right now in med school, and this idea of like, yeah, they're going to give me a week off, a day off every week, very funny. Okay, you're in a season of life now where the Sabbath was not made for, you were not made for the Sabbath, okay? This season of life, you're going to have to work more than you normally would. But here's what you have to be careful with, and you should get someone else in your life to keep you accountable to this. You can get used to that, and then after it's over, after you have to work that much, you just keep doing it anyway. Because you're just used to working all the time, you're used to building your identity off of it, and you need help from someone to say, no, you need to start resting now, okay? Don't let that period be longer than it has to be. And be honest about whether you really have to. You say, well, I just have to. I'm in this really tough schooling program, so I could never take time off. Okay, you actually could. Like, they wouldn't kick you out if you took some time off. So be honest about when you really have to. And again, have other people in your life. Some of you go to school together. Talk to some of your classmates. Like, hey, what would be reasonable for people whose the level of demands are being placed on us that are here? So shoot for a rhythm. Second thing, invest in your relationship with Jesus. And again, that's a daily, weekly, yearly rhythm. If the true rest you need is the rest from proving yourself, then you need Jesus. You need to be going to him. And I don't know about you, but sometimes when I have like a day off, the idea of sitting down and reading my Bible and praying, it's like, oh, come on, that feels like work. I'm going to read and think and write and, you know, like, let me just watch this TV show that I'm into. Okay, the TV shows feel nice partially because they're getting your mind off of having to prove yourself, but they can't actually finish the work. Only Jesus can say it is finished. So he's the rest that you really need. So again, shoot for a daily, weekly, yearly rhythm of worship with Jesus. There should be time every day that you're just setting aside, devoted to him. And I know you're like, hey, I can worship Jesus all day through my job. Very true, do it. But the only way that you'll build intimacy with someone is by having a direct conversation with them. Anyone who's married knows this. You know that if you're like, hey, we live together, it'll be fine. Like, we'll just figure it out and, you know, fit it in the margins. And then like 6 months later, you're like, wait, what's going on in your life? And like, why don't we really know each other anymore? There has to be some devoted time built into your life. I mean, it could be 5 minutes in the morning. You're reading a verse of scripture and you're praying, and that's what worship looks for you daily. But then maybe weekly, you're able to set aside greater time. So Saturday comes, you don't have work, you can set aside a half hour. You can set aside an hour where you're deeper in scripture, where you're deeper in prayer. And ultimately, that's why we have this gathering every week. It's a time that we set aside on a weekly rhythm to come together as God's people, to point ourselves to Jesus, who is our true rest. And so prioritize gathering with God's people corporately and let that be the thing that drives your individual devotional life. Maybe it even means taking a weekend. Retreats, things like that can be very helpful over a year-long span to spend intentionally with Jesus. Okay, I'm going to run through these next couple ones. The next one, enjoy God's finished work. So there is actually place for just watching some TV shows on your off day, because you're doing what God did. God looked back and said, the work that I have finished is good, and you're enjoying God's creation the way that God did. So if that means you're watching the artistic creativity of someone else that God has created through this TV show, enjoy it. Praise Jesus for it. Something I love doing when it's warmer out is walking down in Old City. The buildings down there are really beautiful. You're just enjoying God's creativity. Wow, God, you created humans who can make these. Or the Wissahickon Park up where our other congregation is in Manayunk, great hiking up there on the weekends, that's fun for you, that recharges you. Do some of that stuff. Build that time in to just enjoy God's creation. Go over to the art museum, enjoy the beauty of what creative people are able to do, but do something that feeds you that way. The next thing is practice some unplanned time. Block out 4 hours and say, I got no plan for those 4 hours. Whatever comes up, I'm just going to do it. The only thing I'm not going to do is work. Working my job. So it might be, I just feel like reading right now. I feel like going for a walk, so I'm going to do that. There was this pattern in the Old Testament law where every 7 years, the land was to lay, unfarmed. So basically that whatever came up, came up. That's kind of what this time is like in your life. It's whatever comes up, comes up. Stuff comes out of you that you're like, huh, I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't planned to. So practice some unplanned time. And the last thing I'll say is that there's never a day off from Jesus. In this passage, the disciples are with Jesus the whole time. You will never find true rest by taking a day off from Jesus. If your idea of a day off is, I just need a day where I don't need to obey Jesus and I can just make it all about me, that is not true rest. That is not finishing the work of proving yourself. If the disciples had said, hey, Jesus, you go over here, we're going to be over here picking grain in this field, that's not what our passage presents to us. It's this idea that Jesus is with you at all times and he is your true rest. Religion is the enemy of your rest. That need, incessant need, that voice inside of you that says you have to do more, you have to be better, will kill your ability to rest. And the way to solve it isn't by ultimately exalting this day of rest and exalting rest itself. When you do that, you just won't get it. The only way to get it is for the work to prove yourself to be finished by someone else, and that is what Jesus has done. So come to Jesus for your true rest.